right. Now, Jamie, this one is yours.
All right. Well, hello. Welcome to Unprofessional, that show where we talk to super fascinating people about anything but work. I'm Jamie Newberry, and also here is Dave Wiskus. How are you, Dave?
Hello, Jamie.
How was that?
Very official sounding intro.
Oh, I tried really hard.
It's like some NPR shit right there.
I hate to admit it, but I practiced.
It paid off, Jamie.
Would you hate to admit that?
Because I don't know if that sounds super nerdy, but anyway.
Practicing isn't cool.
Who practices?
That's cool.
You're supposed to be just good at it naturally. So, hey, cool guest. Super interesting, fascinating guest. We have here today with us, Mr. Adam Lissagor.
Yeah. Hey.
Are you out there?
I coached her on how to pronounce your name.
Thanks. No.
Yeah, I had to ask that too.
Because I screwed it up last time.
I don't recall that, but thank you. Yeah, that shows a lot of pride in workmanship and respect for your guests. I appreciate it.
Well, if our eagle-eared listeners may recall, you were on the Christmas episode.
You were in a Christmas show.
It was sort of billed as your episode, but over the course of the conversation, I just kept adding more people to the Skype call as a surprise. And it turned out great in terms of the show was a lot of fun to listen to. It turned out terribly in that you barely got to talk.
That's right. I the alternate title of that show is The Night I Ignored My Family. And it was on Christmas Eve.
Oh no, Christmas Eve.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Yeah, we didn't like fake that. That really was the Christmas episode. We recorded that damn thing on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
The night before Christmas when Adam ignored his family.
Yeah. And everybody was...
Well, how are you, Adam?
Oh, I'm... You know what? I'll be honest. I'm a little stressed out. I'm stressed out. Do you guys ever have work disasters that you just feel like you're not going to pull out of?
Never, ever. That's never happened. No, I'm just kidding.
Almost exclusively.
Almost all disaster, all the time. Okay.
Yeah.
You should do something about that, Dave. That's no way to live.
That's why I don't have a real job anymore, and I do other things.
I think that work should be like 90% triumph and maybe 10% mediocrity, and then... No, wait, there's nothing left over. And then 2% math.
2% math.
Yeah. No, and then I think maybe 1% should be reserved for disaster, and I'm sort of living that. I'm living that right now.
Are you speaking of the microphone situation, or is this something
oh,
bigger?
If only my work disaster were just that I couldn't find a good microphone to use for a podcast.
Well, I feel terrible now that we've compounded your existing disaster with microphone problems.
No, I needed this. I needed to get away.
You needed a different problem?
Yes.
Well, this one, near as I can tell, has been solved. So
good.
Maybe that's the just the juice you needed to solve the other one.
Yeah, I'm double miking it. I'm double systeming it, actually.
We're
double system, double ending. So double system is when you record your video to one thing, or your picture to one thing, and then your sound to another thing. I'm actually recording my sound to two separate recording devices just in case of failure. And then we're double ending it because that's what we do as professional podcast people.
We might want to explain for the audience what double ending is, because I'm imagining that they're imagining something other than what we're actually doing.
If I may interrupt before you do, we also might want Adam to just give an overview for those guests who may not know who Adam is, just in case.
For those guests?
For those guests, sorry. Those
for future
listeners.
Guests.
Future guests. For those listeners, bear with me.
Sure.
That might not know Adam. Who are you?
Oh, I'm happy to introduce myself. My name is Adam. I primarily, what I do is I own a production company / agency called Sandwich Video. We're based in Los Angeles, and we make what can best be described as product videos or commercials mostly for tech products that need to be introduced, need to be promoted, through non-traditional advertising means usually. And I've been doing it for a few years now, and I appear in a lot of the videos that I make, but
You're
not
a star.
All of them. I refuse to sit in a director's chair. It's my own little quirk. what else can I say? I have 8 really solid, amazing people working for me.
And then 2 that are really kind of
so. Yeah, about to let them go. Don't tell.
And you guys are experts in double ending?
Yeah, we double end just all day long.
Ah, tell me more.
And yeah, so I've got a lot of friends. I work in the movie making, commercial making, production business, but I've got a lot of friends in the tech business side of things, and that's primarily my focus.
It's funny because I think of you as the tech industry's movie guy.
Yeah, I could think of myself as that. I don't make movies. I have worked on movies in my prior life, but I don't. And who knows? Maybe at some stage of the game, I might dip into that again as more of a movie maker. But
somebody on Twitter was just suggesting that you direct the unprofessional movie that we've
that's
come up
right.
with.
Somebody did say that just today.
We had a while back. We had on an episode. We workshopped a movie idea, mm-hmm. and it was sort of kind of a sci-fi kind of a movie. And it was suggested on Twitter that you should direct it.
All right.
Which
well,
I agree with. If we do this, you should be the director.
I think that could definitely happen. Let's put those wheels in motion.
And you don't have to sit in a chair. We won't make
good,
you
good because
do
I
that.
Don't. I just don't do it. It's my thing. It's my thing.
That's good.
And you won't have to have 2 microphones on you. That's the thing.
Okay, good.
2 mics, 1 sandwich.
Sounds luxurious, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What a gig.
You know what? You probably don't think of this. Not like if you don't work in production or you've never been on set or anything like that, it's not a consideration that you would think of is really important. But the fact that directors often get their own trailer to work out of and stuff seems to me to be like just crucial if you're an important movie director, and only not only because you need somewhere to get some, you know, to get away, do some thinking and get some respite from the hustle and bustle of the crew, but also you need a place to go to the bathroom in peace. And it's not something you think about. I mean, it comes up on every shoot where you're just like, there's even a code name for it. When you have to go number 1 or number 2, you tell your first assistant director, I'm going 10-1, or you tell them I'm going to pee pee, and then they say, director is 10-1, he's stepping off. And that's because it's impolite to say you have to pee pee to the rest of the crew. But like, there's always this awkward moment on the set where, you know, you want to do when nature calls in an obscene way. And maybe there's like 1 bathroom on the location and the door is broken and the rest of the crew has been, using it all day long. And there was like stroganoff for lunch and on and on and on. And sometimes you just want to get away. And to me, that's what it would, if I had made it as a director, you get your own special place to use the restroom, the washroom, sorry.
The WC. So is this why you don't sit in the chair?
Yeah.
Like, I'm wondering how these things connect.
Because it blocks me up. No, it doesn't connect at all. I just went off on a tangent. Sometimes I like to talk about going to the bathroom.
I was waiting for it to circle back to.
It doesn't.
And that's why I don't like it. Or maybe director's chair was your euphemism for having your own bathroom or something.
That's
where my mind went.
The director's chair, and this sounds like I've manufactured like a quirk that I specifically wanted to talk about because I used it in my bio just now. But usually on set they'll bring in a certain number of chairs. You know the ones. You know, the director's chairs, the ones with cloth and or canvas and wood. And they'll bring in
They just don't look very comfortable.
No, well they're not bad. I mean, it's better than standing.
Sure.
Yeah. But they bring them in for the director, for the producers, maybe for the clients if they're there. But to me, I always feel like if I'm sitting in that thing, well, I feel like a jerk. Like I feel like I look like a jerk. like the guy that's just sitting there on his butt while everybody else is working hard. And I'd say it's much cooler to sit on an Apple box if you can. That's the real move right there.
Okay.
And an Apple box is just like, you know, a wooden box that they use for getting up higher on stuff.
Yeah.
Why hasn't like Herman Miller gotten on this? Why isn't somebody coming in and saying, hey, forget these canvas and wood chairs. Let's bring in some M-bodies or Aerons or something.
That's well, there's a great portability factor.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the main considerations. Also, Dave, that's ridiculous.
But comfortable.
Yeah. But comfortable. It's just like how much space, and can you imagine trying to wheel in like two at a time? And you're just, ugh.
They're very heavy. They're cumbersome. Do you guys have the Herman Miller chairs?
I had an Aeron for a long time. I have no chair now.
Yeah, I have a big green ball at my desk.
Oh, that's great. You guys are very alternative work sitters or standers. I just use a $40 job from the Office Depot. The Aeron nice. Chair that I used very briefly sort of had a weird effect on my lumbar, and I don't have back problems, so I ditched it.
Yeah, yep.
Chairs are an important thing, and this is... Maybe if they made like some kind of box that you sat in and it like closed, or there's a curtain that closed around you mm-hmm. from your waist, you could solve the bathroom problem and the chair problem in one go.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare scenario.
Like you're always in a position where if you need to go, you just go. Nobody even needs to know.
Yeah, no, that doesn't seem like it would work very well. It seems like...
somebody's got to empty that situation. That just yeah, no, no. Yeah.
Well, no, it'd be connected to plumbing.
Really?
Or, yeah, I don't know.
Also cumbersome. Or just a hose. If you can.
Yeah. I'm just the idea man. I can't solve all the problems.
Really, Dave, if you're really going for that, couldn't you just put your desk in your bathroom? Make that your office? Literally your office?
Well, no, I meant for the director.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Like a waist down porta potty situation for the director.
On set in front of many people.
Right. Well, nobody would know you're, you know.
They would know.
Doing your business.
Yeah.
So before the show.
Yeah.
You had asked us to watch something.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah. Just, you know, because I didn't know whether we were going to have some stuff to talk about.
Well, there's always stuff to talk about.
Always. Never a shortage.
You would, and it's rare that anybody even asks, and that surprises me. Normally, guests are just like, yeah, I'll do the show, and then they show up and they expect to be told what the thing is. Our policy is that we don't have, I don't know if it's a policy, but that's kind of how we do stuff. We don't ever really start with a topic. Mm-hmm. Not because we're against it, but just because we found that we always end up going off on tangents anyway. We're just going to save the energy. Sure. We're not gonna put the time into doing that if it never works out that way. So it was interesting that you asked specifically, what are we going to talk about? Because then I feel like a jerk, like, oh God, how unprepared are we going to look now?
No, that's okay, not at all. As long as the topic at hand is that there is no topic, that's fine.
Yeah, it's just unscripted conversation. But you did toss out a suggestion for a thing we could talk about mm-hmm. today, which was this movie, The Congress.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, see, here's how it came up. You ever do that thing where you're at home, like browsing Netflix and iTunes, and you can't, there's nothing that you really want to dedicate 2 hours to, or you just, you realize that you've dedicated an hour to finding something to dedicate 2 hours to.
And then that's like every day of my life.
Yeah. Yes. And then what it means is we've got too much damn time on our hands is what it means. But what I end up doing a lot of times is maybe once a month going into the trailers app on Apple TV and just like watching the last month's worth of new and interesting trailers, which I used to do on the web, but I don't really, you know, I don't really have that leisure time available so much anymore. So now it's like nice to be at home in the living room and, you know, get a bowl of popcorn and sit down with a missus and then just have trailer watching for a half an hour. It can be fun. So that's what we did last night. We ended up going through all the trailers, and it's usually, I feel like our viewing of trailers is usually targeted to the latest sort of indie/epic studio sci-fi offerings, or the latest indie super precious coming of age stories, you know, something to roll your eyes at, or then whatever like the funny people are doing, you know, whether it's Paul Rudd or Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig.
It sounds like you and I have exactly the same taste in movies. That's what I'm getting right
probably
now.
Probably we do, like, exactly. And or it could just be that it's a lot of that's the stuff that bubbles up to the top on iTunes trailers app. But I realized last night that there's a just a wealth of really interesting looking sci-fi movies coming up, and one of them caught my attention specifically because it's got an A-list cast and a really interesting concept that's sort of inside industry, inside entertainment a little bit, which is
it's got Princess Buttercup.
It's got Princess Buttercup slash what's her character's name on House of Cards?
Oh, I forget. She's amazing on that show.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she
Robin Wright Penn.
Robin Wright. One of the greats. And she's in this movie. And I love movies like this that are about media and like just show a vision of what how the story, the bigger story of media and how it affects society might play out. And it feels like this is one of those. Truman Show I would put in that category. And there was some awful attempt back in the early 2000s, I think, with Al Pacino. And it was called Simone, I think. Simone.
Oh, Simone. I remember that one. Simone. But yeah, I remember that was pretty bad, actually.
It was awful. It was awful. It was made by a director of photography. It was his a screenwriter. It was his first time directing. Anyway, this one looks really interesting. And I would say, I don't know, what do you usually do if there's like something that you want your viewers to watch or your listeners to watch?
We can put a link to the trailer in the show notes.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we just like, we pause for 2 minutes while they watch it.
Yeah. So, you guys go watch that right now. Hit pause on the show. Go watch that. Then come back because the rest of this isn't going to make much sense if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's only a couple of minutes. You should go watch it.
And honestly, the trailer doesn't make a whole lot of sense either, but that's kind of what I like about it.
All right. So hit pause now. Okay, welcome back.
Hope you did your homework.
So watching it, my first thought was, this is effectively, it's being Robin Wright. That's what it felt like to me.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I get it. So the parallel to being John Malkovich, is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's totally the vibe I got. And I know it's not the same exact premise, but that same thing of the personality is the person.
Yeah, she is the person that you know. She is Robin Wright in this movie.
Right, playing a dramatized version of herself in the same way that Malkovich did in Being John Malkovich. And there's been a couple of others, like, I want to say recently, I can't think of an example, but I feel like this has come up a couple of times. Somebody playing themselves.
Yeah, it's great. I'm sure that IMDb probably has a tag for that subgenre of movie, and your listeners can submit a whole bunch of
I'm sure we're going to get tweets.
I love that genre of movie. I love when celebrities have the, just the courage to, courage is a weird word. They have the boldness to self-refer. And
did you watch Entourage?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Seth Green on Entourage. That dude, he played such a dick version of himself.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. I think a lot of celebrities, they'll take the opportunity to have some fun with it, which is great. And, like, just be, you know who else did that? Michael Cera in The World's End or End of the World.
I loved that movie.
Yeah, that was a great one because he his character was just the worst. Like, remember he got smacked by Rihanna. He tried to snort coke off everything.
Yeah, that was
that movie is a great example of this because everybody in the movie was playing a dramatized version of themselves.
Exactly, and then Jay Baruchel was the almost non-celebrity of the celebrity group because he was the least famous. He was the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so this movie, The Congress, is one of those where Robin Wright plays herself with her own real past of like her filmography and everything, and what I gather is that, can I describe it, or is that?
Please.
Yeah,
please
go for it.
So this is just from
memory.
For those
who didn't pause and watch the
movie. Yeah, this is just from memory from watching it last night, but that she plays Robin Wright Penn, or I think it might just be Robin Wright now. She plays Robin Wright, who is essentially an aging actor at sort of what is implied as the twilight of her career. Like, her best days are behind her, even though nothing could be further from the truth. But maybe the studio is convincing her that her star is falling. And that there's this technology in which they can scan her, essentially, and capture the essence of her and her image and her emotions and her persona, and then use that data that they've captured to basically use her in any future artifact or entertainment ever. And then they own her. They own her image as a property, and that they can do anything with it. And that she's sort of signing a contract, like almost like signing a deal with the devil. And the studio executive is played by this guy. I don't know what his name is, but he's just great. He's a foreign actor, I think. And then that in itself is a compelling enough idea, but then it goes into this sort of metaphysical / spiritual dimension where the fact that she's given herself over to be scanned and captured as data then transports her into some other world that doesn't resemble our own world. It's almost like a data world, or like a Lawnmower Man world.
I was going to say Tron.
Tron, yeah, like a Tron world, like a computer world where everything's super weird and like maybe there's an alternate reality and it's creepy and nightmarish. And that's kind of an interesting idea. And I don't know what they're going to do with it. And I don't really care so much about that part of the story. I like the other part, the other part that sort of stays anchored to this world.
Well, apparently this came out last year.
What?
Yeah, it was released in 2013.
No.
Or at least it was an independent release. I'm looking now to see if I can find if it's available anywhere.
Why is it? Because it says release. I think on iTunes it said release date was like in June or August maybe.
Yeah, looking on IMDb, The Congress, 2013 film.
Maybe that's when they made it, but the release date.
I mean, premiered at Cannes last May 15th.
Oh, wow.
Of this crazy. Year?
Of 2013.
Oh, that's weird. That probably means it sucks.
American Rice, theatrical video on demand, digital release planned for 2014. So I guess it's not out yet, but it was premiered last year.
Interesting. In theaters, August 29th, 2014.
Yeah, it probably means they just don't know what to do with it.
And, I guess it came out in France on July 3rd.
Yeah, they get all the best stuff.
Of last year. Mm.
Strange.
Danny Houston is the...
Well, I want to see it.
Yeah,
I
want to see it. Harvey Keitel, Robin Wright, Paul Giamatti, John Hamm.
This it's got all the greats. Yeah. It's got some great people in it.
This is guaranteed to be a winner,
yeah.
Or at least an indie darling.
It's probably real crap, though, to be honest. I think this happens quite a lot, where you'll see a trailer for an interesting-looking sci-fi movie, and then within the first 4 minutes, you can tell there's a reason that it wasn't at your local Cineplex.
You never heard of it.
Did you see the, I'm sure you did, A Scanner Darkly?
I saw that, yeah.
What'd you think of that?
It was real interesting. It was real artsy and experimental, and I don't need that.
It gave me a headache.
That's a movie I really wanted to like. Yeah, it's been so long. That was when I actually owned an animation studio too, when that came out. I mean, it was, you know, we were all like, "Whoa, it's going to be so great!" And then it was kind of like, "Eh."
Oh, interesting. Tell me about that. What was your animation studio?
We just did we did broadcast animations for commercials and stuff for agencies, stuff for McDonald's and all, you know, big commercials, a lot of interactive stuff too. Like we'd shoot green screen stuff and mesh it. We did some 8-1 steak sauce videos and I don't know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, did that for like 5 years.
Wow. Why don't you do that anymore?
You know, I got kind of burned out. The interactive stuff was always my passion, so I kind of broke off and really focused on that when we broke up the band, so to speak. In 2009, we did that. And I don't know, I got kind of, I don't know, if you work with huge agencies, like, I prefer working directly with the customers, with the, you know, if it's a brand, mm-hmm. as opposed to going through an agency. Yep. The big agencies have a very formulaic way of working, and it really removes a layer of empathy from your target audience, and I don't like that. So, I don't know, just a change.
Yeah, I agree with all those things you said, and then you definitely know the crisis of post-production crisis.
That I'm sure do.
I mean, that can be the loneliest.
We didn't actually ask you what your crisis was. Is that it's a post-production crisis?
It is.
I was hesitant. I didn't want you to put you in a position where you were going to say something incriminating.
Oh, I don't mind. No, and I won't name names. I won't be specific. But yeah, there's, you know, I work directly, like you said. I don't work with agencies hardly at all. I've only done that twice or three times. So mostly I'm working directly with clients, which is awesome, except that they're usually, they usually don't have the experience to maybe foresee issues that might crop up. So they think that they want one thing, and then it turns out that that might have been the wrong way to think of it, and then everybody's sort of left to deal with it in post-production. So what I'm dealing with right now is, you know, we shared an edit of something, and then, you know, you either hear back right away, or you don't hear back right away. You don't hear back for 24 hours or something, and you know it could go either way. And usually, when you hear back right away, it's great. It's
true, because they're just responding immediately.
They're responsive. Yeah, they know what they think. Even if they don't love it, they know that it's, they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. They know how to, like, they have some vision of working through the problems that they see. If they don't respond right away, it's because they don't know what the hell the problem is and they don't know how to fix it.
Yep, and they have to show it to 45 other people to get everybody's feedback.
How did you know what is going on in my life right now? How did you know that I got forwarded 6 different emails from friends of friends today, all of which say that I'm a worthless human being? How did you know that?
17 years, my friend. 17 years I've been doing this stuff. Yep.
I mean, it makes sense. Your reputation is that you're terrible at this sort of thing.
Well, you know, reputation does not hold a candle. Reputation doesn't hold any water at all once the paperwork is signed.
It's true.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
It's very true. And, you know,
It's doing design work, even. That's always been the case for me. Hmm. I can point to things I've done, and people can be impressed. People can be excited. People can even approach me based on things that I've done in the past. Mm-hmm. But the second the ink is on the page, what matters is their opinion.
Yeah, we want you because you're you, but we want what we want.
Yeah, we want what we want. And then there's prove to us that you're not going to fuck this up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
So what's your oh God, we're talking about work. How do you select the people that you'll work with or the projects you want to take on? Is there like some criteria, or is it just like, hey, let's keep those bills paid?
No, there's definitely criteria, and there's like sort of a holistic, holistic process with everything. I can't even pinpoint it, but generally, you know, just from signs from the very first line of communication, you do a little bit of follow-up research to find out a little more. And you know, it's financial, it's quality of the people working on the project, and it's quality of the product itself. And you know, basically you can sort of see, you learn to see 10 steps ahead to a nightmare. You know, I'm sure Jamie can attest to this. You start to learn the early warning signs of a nightmare client, and probably if you identify, you know, 10 times you identify nightmare clients, you're probably only going to have the courage to fire those clients one out of those 10 times or something. The other 9 times you're stuck working with them because you don't want to, you know, you're just holding out for that that glimmer of hope that it might not be the nightmare that you expect it to be.
Right. I usually start everything with a 30-minute conversation. Like, it can last up to 30 minutes, but you know by then. That's just to see if we're going to work together, you know?
Sure.
Before we even write contracts or write scopes or even get into the project details, it's kind of, let's just have a compatibility check.
Yeah. And it's weird sometimes. There have probably been a handful of times, five to 10 times. And I've had, probably upwards of 1,000 or more phone calls in the past few years. Where you can sniff it out right away. And sometimes, like, if you're feeling saucy, you're feeling a little punchy, you can tell the people right there on the phone, you know what, this isn't probably going to work out, so we should just save our time.
Yep. And
that always kind of feels better than it reasonably should.
That's my approach to dating. Just get up in the middle of a conversation. You know what? I don't think this is going anywhere.
Yeah, you see scenes of that in movies. I haven't dated in like 40 years, but like you see scenes of that in movies where two people will be out on a first date and then just like, you know what? This isn't working. And then they just kind of get up and walk away. And that always feels like it's very honest and freeing to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah, and I joke, but the truth is, if it's a first date and I know it's not going well and it's not going to go anywhere, I just suffer through it.
Yeah.
I smile and I listen to her stories and I'll, be polite and
wave, boys.
It almost feels passive aggressive on my side. How long can I go seeming like I'm being polite before she understands and will initiate the wandering off and different? Like, how do I don't know. I don't ever want to be a jerk and just say, hey, fuck off.
Oh, yeah, you definitely couldn't do that. I mean, at the very least, you're having a nice conversation. You know, you're having a conversation with another human. And might as well.
Somebody who works alone, that's sometimes that's nice. Like, hey, a conversation with a person. I don't want to lead you on and make you think this is going anywhere, but I do like talking to a person.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, though, how do you close out of that situation, Dave? Like, okay, the date comes to a close. Now, like, if it has gone well, there's the will you want to do it again sometime sort of thing, I think. I also am very out of the dating scene. Like, I just haven't in forever. So, how does that work? I mean, you either...
Usually you kind of both parties know, and if it, things come to a close and you kind of recognize that you've both been polite and you're just enjoying each other's company without it needing to be anything, you can just say, hey, I had a great time, take care, and you just walk away. There's no planning.
See you around.
There's no, yeah, it's like, well, see you later, and that's it. But if one person is not on the same page with the other person, then you try doing things like, hey, I had a great time. And then maybe somebody says, well, maybe we should do this again. And the only move is totally.
That's so funny.
That's the one and only move there, because you don't want to be like, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's funny how laden with subtext the word totally it can be. or just like those little one word colloquialisms that we toss off, especially in the workplace. I don't do this. I don't get this now because I work in an office with people I really enjoy working with, and we use Slack for most of our communication, stuff like that. So there's a real comfortable flow. But when I used to work in an office where I didn't really want to talk to anybody that I worked with, there was a lot of just like, yeah, awesome,
totally.
Awesome. Totally. Exactly. Totally. Awesome.
For me, it's not just the word, it's the half beat right in front of it. Yeah. Totally.
That's good. That's like a two count or a two and a half count.
There's just a little bit of, but you know, I mean, if it's the end of the night and it's just not, you want to be polite, but you don't want to set yourself up for having to do more shit. I'm just in this because I like talking to you. That I just have, there's no romantic connection, and there's no nice way to say
it. Yeah,
that.
So get it while you can, am I right? Get it, soak up the whiskers.
Yeah. It works both ways, too. I'm sure there's been plenty of girls I've been out with where I thought she was great or whatever, and she's just like, yeah. I can't even say I'm sure that's happened. I am sure that's happened. I've been on that date many times.
How does that go? I gotta keep prodding. How does that go? How does that end?
Exactly the way you think it ends. I'll send a text or I'll call or something, and she's like, you know, dial tone.
she texts back totally, but just like
with the pause in front of it, two spaces. Yeah.
Some spaces and just the word dial tone.
There's gotta be an emoji for an awkward pause.
We need a throwing shade emoji. That's what we need.
Oh man.
So much better than this yo bullshit.
Yeah, what do we make of this?
I did see this.
What do we make of this? So did you see this yo app in the news?
Yep. Saw it.
Okay.
So if you haven't, hit pause.
That'll be our thing.
Go look at the internet and come back. Yeah, because this episode will be out tonight, so this will still be news. This isn't coming out like a year from now where people are like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think yo is going to be much news tomorrow. It'll have dried up.
No, it'll be forgotten.
Yeah.
If we release this episode tomorrow, nobody's going to know what we're talking about. So there's this app called Yo, and all it does is send the word yo to somebody in your contact list.
Yep, and people invested $1 million. In an app that just says yo. Now that's been the buzz that is the kicker.
Yep. Tech story of the year.
Yep. Brilliant.
Do you think maybe we've hit the tipping point where we're going to start to realize that the best and brightest minds of our generation are doing stupid shit instead of solving problems?
Oh, not by a long shot, Dave. I think we've got a ways to go before we hit that tipping point of realization.
You know, what these guys should have been doing is spending their time coming up with a new way to share photos.
Solving real problems?
Yeah.
Like sharing photos?
Or brief messages with each other on the internet, or a blogging platform, or any of these things would be better.
That everybody else is working on.
Even in software, there's problems that I don't understand why nobody's solving, like podcasting. Why does making a podcast still suck?
That's true.
Yeah,
that is very true.
We got to get that down. Like, there's got to be like a Squarespace of podcasting soon.
Yeah, why? It blows my mind that there's not. I don't understand how that has not been tackled. I'm sure that there are people listening to this right now who are nodding their heads and saying, I'm working on that. But
give me a minute.
Ship it. God damn it, ship it.
And tell us about it.
Solve my problem.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe the answer is that there's not enough of a market for it, not enough of a need.
That's my sense. I think that there's just so few podcasters. So I was talking to a friend of mine who makes an app called Teleprompt Plus.
Mm. Oh, no, we use app. That here.
Hey, look at that. So this episode's sponsored by. so they make Teleprompt Plus, and we were just discussing, the app was for a long time like $9 or $10 or something on the store. Mm-hmm. And he had pushed with his partners that this needs to be more expensive. So they raised the price. I think it's $25 now. Uh-huh. And when they went from $10 to $25, sales went up.
Sure.
And his explanation, his best guess as to why, is that if you're looking at a sea of crappy thrown together teleprompt apps, these things look like they're made by amateurs. The one that costs the most money, the kind of person who's looking for a teleprompter, they just want the one that's the best.
Yep.
And if there's one that's priced like a pro app, they're going to grab that.
Yeah. It's so dumb how that works on us, that little bit of psychological manipulation. But it works.
Meanwhile, my $5 notes app, we just changed the price to $3 and it's going nuts. So the best I can figure is it's got to be about the market.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it depends on the product for sure.
Right, right.
And so much has been written. I mean, I feel like the topic was already exhausted within the first 6 months of the App Store being open, of how you price things in the market. And remember, like Instapaper, people were, it feels like up in arms over how InStick paper was priced. I don't know. It's always been an interesting and controversial topic. But some things just work. And it really depends on what your market is. If your market, I mean, how many people use a teleprompter?
Right, right. And that's what I mean. If you were to charge, if you made the podcast making app, you wouldn't charge $10 for that.
No, yeah, definitely.
Presumably, you would charge $100 or $200 for that. And the people who make podcasts would spend that because this is, you know,
they might
make their life easier.
They might.
Squarespace is going to pay for it anyway.
I don't know, but I don't know if they would. I think if there were a pro version of it, they would pay $100. I think that enough people have recorded the first episode of a podcast and then never a second episode to make it a $20 purchase. The light version of whatever that software is.
What I'd kind of like to see is something like, remember iWeb? Mm-hmm. Where anybody could sit down and they made, you know, a quick website and they could put it up there. Like, why can't we have people, why can't my grandmother or grandfather, you know, just gender equality, sit down and record a podcast, like an audio thing where they share the family newsletter that they would otherwise email out to everybody. Mm-hmm. Why can't people do that?
I would love it if your grandparents made a podcast, Dave. I don't know, that'd be super cute.
I've talked to a couple of startups that were all around this idea of the elderly in your family have so much history to share, and most of it is going to be lost when they pass, and so it gives them a publishing platform to do so. Whether that's in blogging or, text, or if I remember correctly, it's like it'll automatically call their phone, and once they answer, they can just start telling a story, and it'll save it and put it up on the.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's real neat, and I don't even remember what it's called.
So anything like that, where you're trying to capture a person to some degree for posthumous recounting, that, I don't know, there's something powerful about that. I think even more so than text. Like, it'd be great to have, my grandfather passed away a while back, about a year ago. As much as it would be nice to have him writing down all of his stories, it'd be so much more powerful, so much more interesting to hear him tell them, like to have the audio of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not going to get you're not going to get most old people to figure out how to record audio in their ancient desktop computer.
Right.
I don't even know if the iPad makes it any easier, to be honest. I'm so dismayed by this. I got my grandma an iPad Air, and I was so excited about it because I figured this is the thing she's finally going to be able to figure out. And no, she just, like, it sat there and went unused. And even when I tried to show her how to use it, it's just, she's so aggressively anti-learning this thing.
Yeah. It really depends on the person, huh?
Depends on the person. Some people are, even into old age, it feels like they're, I'm sorry, I cut you off, Jamie. But
No.
Into old age, some people are really excited about expanding their skills or learning a new thing. And then some people, like my poor grandma, has spent her life sort of basically being told that there are a lot of things that she'll never learn. And she's believed it, you know?
That makes my heart sad.
Mine too.
I saw this thing, maybe it was a cartoon or something. It was posted on Facebook. I wish I could remember the source, and I'm sure somebody out there knows it. Maybe one of you guys knows it. But it was a somebody saying that they get sad when people will start sounding excited about something and then kind of stop and apologize, like, oh, sorry, I get a little excited when I talk about this thing. Because what it says is that they've spent their entire lives, whenever they get excited about something, somebody basically told them, shut up, nobody cares.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's a learned behavior.
And I've, that kind of rings true for me. There's moments where I'll get really amped up. I'm sort of prone to do that, get really amped up about a thing, and I can't stop talking about the thing or focusing on the thing, and I just feel like, oh God, why? Why do I do this? Nobody cares. And where was it in my history that somebody told me to shut up?
Elementary school, I bet.
Probably.
I mean, that's where that's where most nerd-like behavior is clamped down first, it feels like, or, you know, junior high age.
Before the horror, memories. Yeah.
But I mean, that's what we talk about when we talk about nerd or nerding out on something, being a nerd for something, being a blank nerd. It's all about being so into that thing that you're enthusiastic, outwardly so, about it. And early on, it feels like that kind of behavior is punished in a way, which totally sucks because it ends up being a lifelong pattern of behavior.
So true. Yeah, it makes me worry about what other things I might be missing or what other things I might see the wrong way. Last week we had a guest on the show, this guy TJ, who is a BMX bike writer.
He's
guy
an professionally. X Games pro, and then
X Games winner, hosts a show on MTV, and it's like, here's a guy, and he's just so positive, so overwhelmingly like effusive about the world. And ever since he was on, I just keep thinking to myself, like, why don't I see the world that way?
I don't know. Maybe he was just, he got invigorated by activities that were more accessible or more relatable and weren't so easily punishable by.
I think maybe being into riding bikes and like sports and being outside is a lot different socially than being into computers.
Well, yeah, definitely. Sorry.
Yeah.
Or Star Wars.
It's true. I mean, there's different personality types. There's so many things that contribute to that sort of thing. I mean, with that particular guest, like, we grew up together, you know? Like, we grew up next door to each other, and we hung out. We're, like, best friends until I moved in fifth grade. And, you know, it's funny because we... Yeah, I definitely took the nerd route. Like, I'm so not into sports and athletic things. Like, I run and stuff. That's about it. But, I don't know. It's interesting, though. But his mom was always just amazingly supportive, too, you know? I don't know. I always wonder what kinds of things really contribute overall.
I blame the parents.
It's always the parents.
It's always the parents. It makes me think, your comment about... setting up systems for old people to... Oh, God, there's a siren behind me. Sorry. Fucking New York.
Systems for old people.
You were talking about systems for old people to tell their stories, to get these things captured, and I think maybe that's not far off from what we hope the best of podcasts are to begin with. I mean, that's why you're here now. We want you to be able to talk and share thoughts and opinions in a way that other people might not normally get to see or hear you do.
It's a time capsule of you, Adam.
That's true. Forgive me if I'm wrong. Odeo was set up, and then Apple ate their lunch somehow. What was it they were doing?
I don't even remember what they were doing. That was
it was before the podcast, like podcasting on iTunes. Odeo was going to be like a database of podcasting. Now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Odeo originally had some like dead simple mechanism for making a podcast. Like, it could have been as easy as you call a 1-800 number and start talking or something like that.
That's the kind of thing that sounds great on paper, but the audio quality you're going to get from somebody calling an 800 number is going to be just awful.
Sure. Hey, speaking of this, this could be an interesting segue to something else, but do you guys ever use... FaceTime audio?
Yes.
Do you use it?
I have friends in Europe who call me using that.
Is it what's your experience of it too when you're using it?
Same as any phone call where I get really weirded out that somebody called me.
Okay. So you're not like you're not really impacted by the difference in quality of the audio?
Oh, the difference in audio quality is remarkable. It's like listening to somebody through a tin can and string versus listening to somebody in the same room with you.
Yeah.
And that's only slightly hyperbolic.
And it's a little weird, right? It's a little almost off-putting that it's like there's not enough separation. There's not enough detachment.
I do enough podcasts that I already feel like, you know, any sense of separation or detachment is gone for me.
That's a very, very good point, actually. And what about you, Jamie? Have you used it?
Nope. No, I do. I do use it. mostly, interestingly, with my daughter, the older one. She's 9, and she does spend the nights every once in a while, and she'll take an iPad with her, and occasionally I'll get a call with FaceTime, sometimes with video, sometimes not. But
oh, when she's spending the night at friend's house?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. technology is awesome.
It really is. I can't even imagine what I have a one-year-old, and I can't even imagine what he's going to grow up with, because he's quite used to the regular idea of having his grandparents just suddenly appear on a glass screen.
Which is so cool. I mean, that's something, you know, my girls are able to do over at their dad's house. They, you know, they're able to talk to their grandparents and stuff who live far away. I think it's so cool.
I was at a Starbucks for a meetup a few weeks ago. And as I'm standing there talking to some people, I look over and there's a girl, I'm going to guess in her 20s, sitting at one of the little two-top round tables that they have at Starbucks. And she's sitting there. She's got her iPad out. And she's talking to her parents, and she's got a pretty heavy British accent, and you can tell from lighting that it's probably later where they are. And so, like, it's obvious she's having a conversation with her parents over FaceTime while she's sitting there in the Starbucks. And I realized, based on where she's sitting, they can see me.
Did you wave?
And so I look over, and I'm like, I'm having this sort of moment, and I see the girl kind of turns around and she's pointing at things like, oh, and here's some people. And, you know, this is the Starbucks I'm in. And so I just wave, like I smile and I wave at them and they wave back. And I had this moment of as cool it is as it is for them to be able to talk to each other in this way across all of those miles and a great big ocean in real time. How neat that I get to like have a cameo role in that conversation. That's how far we've come. It's not just that we can connect, it's that we can also kind of connect with strangers in a weird
way. That's super cool. And if you circle it back around to that idea in the Congress, that if your data is if your identity is replicated as data, then your identity is sucked into a new space. And if you think of it that way, that your image suddenly appeared in the UK and and you actually sort of you teleported in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a very small
way. I got to wave at and smile at people who live in another country at random, almost by mistake.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of like when you stop, when you're in a big city, sometimes you'll walk by a group of people and they'll ask you to take their picture. Mm-hmm. This happens here in New York all the time. It happens in Vegas all the time. But you'll be walking by and somebody will say, hey, can you take our picture? And they'll give you their camera, which is a weird trust thing already.
Yeah.
But they'll hand you a camera or their phone or something, and they'll go stand together and you take their picture, and then they thank you and they come over and they take their thing back and they look at the picture and they're all excited as you walk off. That same kind of, you get to play a role in somebody else's life in a weird, small way. Mm-hmm. I love things like that. I love things that remind me that we are still people.
Yeah. Do you mean that because you stuck your thumb in front of the lens and now you're in the picture?
Oh. No, I like to make a game of it, and I like to try to get them to not just stand there smiling, staring blankly at a camera. I want them to, when they look at the picture a year from now, I want them to think that they were having fun that day. So I try to I don't know. I fun it up a little bit. Or maybe I'm just that asshole who won't shut up and take the picture. I'm not sure which of those is true.
Now, this brings me to an interesting realization I had recently about that common convention where somebody asks you to take a picture, or you see that two people are trying awkwardly to take a picture of themselves and you offer to step in. This happened to me at the Hollywood Bowl maybe about a year ago. There was this couple in the seats in front of us at the Hollywood Bowl. I forget who we were seeing, and they were on a romantic date. And the guy had his camera up, taking a selfie of them with the bowl in the background. It was really pretty and everything. And I remember before they took their selfie, I said, "Hey, you know," I said, "Can I take a picture of you guys?" And I think out of kind of obligation, the guy said, yeah, sure. And then I took the camera and I took a picture of them. And then in that moment, I recognized how much less personal it was, that image, that I had taken it and they were detached from the process in that way. And that how much more valuable a selfie was to them in that moment, and probably how much more memorable that they were actually holding the camera themselves. Not only is the lens closer to their faces, but also the aesthetic of the selfie has all this other interesting connotation now about what we're permitted to, how we're permitted to express ourselves visually, photographically for other people. And when, and the act of taking a selfie, not that I'm writing a dissertation on the selfie or anything, but the act of taking a selfie means something so much than, so much more than just capturing this is me in this place.
Well, there's a second part to this where all of the people involved in this photograph are in the photograph.
Right.
There is no unseen actor off screen.
There's no third person. Yeah, there's no objective point of view. And so, I like in that moment, I made it kind of an effort to remember this to myself. Let people take their selfies. It's going to be more valuable. And then I think that he probably didn't want to go and actually take his selfie because he thought it would look rude to me if he took another one or something like that.
If we continued,
yeah. Aww. Anyway,
I'm not against selfies, and I think after this conversation, I'm very much in favor of it.
No,
yeah,
I
have
but
to say,
sometimes there's no way for eight people to take a selfie, and sometimes you gotta be a good citizen and lend a hand.
That's, well, it reminds me of the people taking pictures with their iPads.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that happened to us. We hike a lot. My boyfriend and I hike a fair amount, and we were hiking at Red Rock recently, and a guy, like, whips out his iPad, and there is connection out there, we learned. And he's having us, he, like, dials up Skype, and he's just talking. So he's, hello, we're hiking. And it was so crazy, but so, anyway, it was bizarre. Not to go out of the realm of the selfie too far there, but, yeah, the iPad is so strange.
FaceTime is a selfie. FaceTime is a video selfie. It's so cool.
It is.
And especially, I love that. I haven't downloaded the iOS 8 beta yet, but I love that idea of recording little video messages and sending them directly through iMessage. Have you guys done any of that?
No. Me and some friends at WWDC were sending messages, the audio messages, which I wasn't on. Well, they were sending them to me. I wasn't on the beta yet, so I'm just getting through iMessage these little these little audio files, and I'd hit play, and it was, you know, friends who didn't realize how exactly this thing worked, who would say things like, I'm not sure if this is working, and that's the entirety of the, it's like your grandfather just got his first iPhone and doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, I love that.
The squirrel just found the technology.
That's great.
Those are great moments.
So I'm, when you mentioned hiking and doing, or even yeah, just the idea of, just the idea of taking a picture, a group shot or something. Have you guys heard of this sort of fairly recent trend in new tech companies? I'm sort of a drone enthusiast, a consumer drone enthusiast, and most of the consumer drones have a camera attached at this point. Mm-hmm. But you still,
yeah, you did a video with the drone selfie.
Yeah, like a drone selfie which is kind of cool. I just copied what somebody else had done, but what Amit Gupta had done. But where you start close to yourself and then you fly it quickly away from yourself and it looks really neat. But
sweet.
But there's like a whole new wave of startups that are trying to make drones with camera attachments that you can essentially just throw up into the air and they will frame you up and take a picture of yourself and then,
and then
return to you. So you're not sitting there with a remote control like we have to do now. It's actually like fully autonomous that you just throw it into the air. Like it's almost infinitely big tripod. It stabilizes and positions itself. It frames you up. It snaps a picture and then it returns home. And there are at least like five companies trying to tackle that right now. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's
what is the upside? Like as human beings, psychologically, what do we get from that?
We get to see ourselves from a new perspective. That's one thing.
Taken the photo yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the probably the novelty of it will wear off, the visual uniqueness of it will wear off. But yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of cool that you can do it. And
I don't mean to sound.
No, I know you're not being a Luddite or anything. You're on board, just as anybody would be. But I think it's more about I don't know. It feels like it's the first indicator of more of that similar kind of stuff to come. You know, just more autonomous behaviors in these kind of things. We always have to get indoctrinated to a new, a new grand shift in technology, like something as big as autonomous behavior in robots. We have to get indoctrinated with like a certain order. And if the first step to us becoming accustomed to having autonomous flying things around us is that we throw them into the air to take stupid snapshots of ourselves, then so be it.
That's exactly it. It's an easing into a bigger picture, basically. Right. Exactly. No pun intended there, but.
Plus also getting to see ourselves from a different perspective is good for us, because it's really easy for humans to get used to seeing the world around us in a very specific way. Like the old thing of when you're in Europe, remember to look up. Like that, like you're in a different place. Look at the buildings. Look at how different everything is, because it's so easy to, you're always looking at the sidewalk or looking in front of you.
Don't they say in New York, remember not to look up?
Nobody gave me that advice.
Yeah. When I was a kid and New York was probably a much more dangerous place, they told you, if you go to New York, don't look up, because people will know you're a tourist and they'll steal your money.
Now every third person in the city is a tourist, so it's fine. But the idea that so all these things kind of connect together, the way we see ourselves, not just like in terms of our own photographs or the images that we can send across the world to our loved ones, but also the stories we tell and the ways we can let other people tell their stories. Maybe that's, and I'm sort of being a hand-wringy philosopher about this right now, but maybe that is the other side of the coin to things like Yo, where we're going to have to deal with stupid bullshit like that on our way to becoming better human beings through technology.
Yeah. It's a great way of looking at it. It's just cruft. It's all useful. It's all, you can't really dismiss any of it, because it's all just part of the process. As much as I would dismiss something like Yo and find very little utility in my own life, I guess I get why it exists, and I guess why I get, it's almost like an art project, right? It's almost like, it's so, something so simple. I bet there's an even simpler version of Yo. I don't know what it is.
Why?
Do you remember in the 80s, it used to be a big thing for on Toyota pickup trucks, people would scratch out all the letters except Yo.
Oh yeah, totally.
Or toy, or yeah.
And but then usually Yo, because it was right in the middle.
Right, it's right in the middle. It's dead centered. It's the middle two of a 6-letter word, and if I can hardly recommend this movie Boyhood, the Linklater movie. Do you guys know about it?
Oh, I do know about this movie. Yeah.
I've not
seen it. It looks awesome.
Yeah. You mentioned A Scanner Darkly earlier. He is just an incredible, you know, gift to filmmaking. And, last weekend, my producer here is on like the board at one of the local film houses, basically, and invited me for the Q&A with the director and cast. And it was a real experience. And so what the deal is Boyhood is this film where they've been shooting it for the last 12 years, and every year since 2002 they've been shooting 15 minutes of the film.
Oh, I've always wanted to do a thing like this.
Well, you totally shouldn't, because it's already done.
Yeah, missed the boat, dude.
Yeah. But so, you know, the same director as the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, that guy.
Yeah, Richard Linklater.
Richard Linklater. He made this story, and it's called Boyhood because it's all about a boy, and you follow this boy from age 6 to 18. And it's incredible, and it's told in his very signature style of like just moments, just like not necessarily disconnected. I mean, there's a thread throughout the whole story, but it's sort of in the way that what do you call it? Terrence Malick tells a story, really beautifying the mundane. And the kid drives a pickup truck with Yo in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yo.
The idea I had earlier, I forget when we were talking about the old people in the podcast thing. The idea I had was I would love to make a video, I guess, podcast of me. Like I'd record me asking all of the questions now, and then in 5 years record all of my answers and then put it together, or like, you know, a year from now or 2 years or whatever it is, but like space it out over time, like me from the present interviewing me from the future.
No, I think some kid did that recently. So like some dude made that video where he interviewed himself 15 years in the future or in the past. I forget.
This is the problem with the internet.
Yeah. Is it everything's been done?
It's true.
There's like, just don't even bother having ideas.
The app store. You just got to make it better.
Yeah. Well,
tell a different story.
Right.
Or just do nothing at all and call it Yo.
Or that.